You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
I am Coach Jen from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Mary Kitzmiller from Kemp, Texas. And you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for October 2nd, episode 3785. Good morning, Horse World.
What is your favorite day of the week?
You never stop learning. You never stop understanding. It's more in depth than just riding a horse. Knowing that for the rest of my life I could work on this and I'll never stop learning.
Welcome back, Mary. Mary stops by the second Thursday of every month. How you been?
Pretty good, pretty good. Excited to get into fall, but we're still getting 90 degree weather here, so one day.
Ugh. In your part of Texas, does fall signal a slowdown in competitions or a speed up, or does it just kind of maintain throughout?
So this time of year is usually the culmination of a lot of associations like year-end stuff. So like for me at the end of this month is the Stock Horse of Texas World Show, where we are competing for year-end bragging rights and world titles and whatnot. Because the weather is finally almost getting bearable. So there's quite a few shows throughout the land. AQHA World Show will be going on up in Oklahoma. All the futurities, so cutting futurity, reining futurity, that's all going on. So revving up a little bit before quieting down around December.
So you do have a off season, so to speak. Things slow down to a dull roar and everybody can take a deep breath and have some cocoa?
For the most part, yeah. You'll still have shows that go through the end of the year. For instance, after the World Show for the Stock Horse of Texas deal, they will start back up again in March. So yeah, a little bit of a slowdown and Christmas time and whatnot.
And here in Central Florida, obviously, in the summertime, things slow down a little bit, but a lot less. We've only been here for about 10 years. And I have noticed now that one of the, what I'm going to call schooling shows, which are either very short local seasons or just completely unaffiliated with other stuff, more and more and more of those are popping up all summer long, which is so interesting because you always hear these conversations about show organizers being stressed and struggling trying to fill classes and fill divisions. And yet I see more and more competitions appearing on the schedule. I'm curious whether or not everybody else out in the universe is experiencing the same thing in their part of the country. Drop me an email and let me know. JenniferHorseRadioNetwork.com. I'm very curious if that's something that's regional, if certain parts of the country are seeing increases and other parts are seeing decreases.
And I'm seeing a trend of people kind of not doing the big, big prestigious shows in favor of these smaller associations that are popping up. Like I know on the western end of things, Ranch Horse, that whole style of competition is exploding. And so people are doing less of the, oh, I'm trying to qualify for AQHA World or I want a big time fancy reiner, and they're doing the Ranch Horse because entry fees are a little bit less and it's still a good healthy competition, but it's not quite as elite and competitive as the bigger shows. So it's more affordable, a little bit more laid back and just fun.
But a little bit less pressure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And for anybody out there who's new to the show, wondering what we're talking about, we talk about all things horse training every month here on Mary's show. And she's here the second Thursday of every month on Horses in the Morning. But Mary also has her own RSS feed. And for the less tech savvy, that means you can listen to Mary's show once a month by subscribing specifically to Mary's podcast. And if you go to your favorite podcast player and just search for Mary Kitzmiller Training and hit subscribe, then her show will come to your feed every month all by itself if you don't want to be subscribed to Horses in the Morning, which is 5 days a week, and that's a lot of shows. Not everybody wants that. I don't know why, but, you know, there we go. But we get these questions. We talk about problems that real people are having, and we get these questions from listeners. And if you want to submit a question for Mary's show or any other show on the Horse Radio Network, we have dozens of them. You need to be an auditor. And to do that, you just need to go to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network and look for the auditor button. There's going to be a button or a graphic somewhere there. Or if you can't figure that out, just drop me an email, jennifer@horseradionetwork.com, and go, how do I become an auditor? And I can send you instructions. It's pretty easy. And that all being said, what is our training tip? We always start with a training tip. And what was it inspired by?
So it was inspired by my recent experience. I had a marathon horse show weekend this last weekend where first I hauled Remy over to Bryan, Texas to compete in a stock horse show. And then I actually got to be a judge at there's an organization that's fairly new in the Mustang world. It's called Forever Branded, and their goal is to get Mustangs adopted, Mustangs and burros, and, you know, educate about the wild horses and burro populations that we have. And they just had a training competition where a bunch of competitors adopted wild burros and Mustangs and trained them. And they all came together in Tyler, Texas at the Texas Rose Horse Park to compete. And I got to be a judge. So one of the things that really helped me as a competitor was judging and like getting to see that perspective of things and what it's like to be a judge and how the way we score affects the way that the competitor places. And it's kind of dispelled a lot of assumptions that I previously had. So, yeah.
Interesting stuff. I hear that from a lot of very experienced equestrians, that it's good to see the perspective of the judge, not just sit down as a competitor and go, I wonder what the judge's perspective is, but to take the time to shadow a judge, take some courses or some clinics on how to be a judge, because it does change your perspective and can make you a better competitor.
Yeah, if you have the opportunity to scribe for a judge, especially, because like what I was doing this weekend is, especially when I was judging the freestyles, I would talk as I was, like, I would just say out loud what was going on in my brain. And so, you know, my scribe got to kind of hear my thoughts on why I thought this was an above average run or why I thought this was a mistake and should lose some points. And so scribing, if you ever get a chance, it's really a great education.
Interesting. So not all types of competitions have judging notes available to the competitors. Not all types of riding competitions even create that. For example, traditionally in hunters, there's no record of what the judge thought and why he thought it. It was in his head, and he just placed the class the way he placed it. Those things are starting to morph now, and I think that's a good thing. A lot of people are worried about it because it can take more time to do all of that. You have to get more volunteers, but hello, it's one more volunteer, or maybe two if you split it into half days. I think we can handle that for the benefit of the competitors, because there was for a long time when all this stuff started 50 years ago, as a competitor, your coach or instructor explained to you what you were doing and not doing that could help you place better. And the community was very small and very tight knit. Everybody knew what everybody was doing. And now we're trying so hard to get people from outside the equestrian universe to come in. I think it's important that people have that perspective. So what was your takeaway after being a judge for your whirlwind weekend?
And this is actually, I've judged several times, mostly competitions like this, these training competitions. And so some basic tips that I like to give competitors, we will often do walkthroughs of the pattern or the trail beforehand, just in case anyone has any questions on, you know, how's this supposed to be done? Is this okay if I do this? You know, can I use this bit type of stuff? And what I tell people during those walkthroughs is, one, it is never we as a judge don't always know that it's going poorly for you as a competitor. You may think that it just looks terrible and you may be internally screaming, but if you don't project that, you can cover up quite a bit. So, you know, maybe at home your horse does this maneuver so much better than he normally does and he's not doing it as well here. Well, you need to have a poker face. And, you know, what I tell people is, like, my horse could be trying to buck me off and the look on my face is going to be like, I am nailing this. This is amazing. So yeah, don't betray your what's really going on in your performance. You show until the very, very end. I'm sad when I see a competitor kind of get mentally defeated through their run and their shoulders drop. And I'm like, no, keep going. So no matter what's going on in the run, you know, own it and act like you are laying down the most amazing run this judge has ever seen. And that not only covers it up, you know, covers up any minor imperfections, but it can also help you and your horse get in a better mindset, you know, kind of a fake it till you make it type of deal.
Well, sure. People always talk about ride the horse that you have now. Whereas when you're competing, if you're asking your horse to do a side pass and he's going more forward than side, if you let that get into your head and the shoulders sag, et cetera, you're not riding the horse in that literal moment. You're riding the horse that was there 3 seconds ago, and you need to be riding the horse that's literally in that moment if you have any chance at all of saving all of this. But interesting. I like that.
Yeah. And have someone film your runs if it's possible, because a lot of times, you know, take the side pass, for instance, in my brain, I'm like, oh, he walked forward 3 steps and he must have just looked terrible. And then I look at the video. I'm like, no, that looked absolutely fine.
It's so usually the other way around when I get somebody to film me. Yeah.
It always feels, for me, it always feels way worse than it actually is. And, oh man, I had an idea for what my next tip was going to
be. Oh no, and I've distracted you.
My brain just like emptied everything I've ever known about horses.
So you, when you judged this past weekend, were all of the divisions and classes you judged in hand, or were some of them under saddle and some of them in hand?
That we had a little bit of everything. So we had some burros showing, which was the cutest thing ever. So those were all in hand. We had some youth in hand, adult in hand, and then we had all those same patterns only under saddle for both the youth and adult. So it was a lot of different competitions, a lot of different divisions over the weekend, which was really fun.
Cool. So judging, you got to look at things from the judge's perspective. And when you're competing, you need to be in the moment. And again, I'm going to reiterate this, because being in the moment, being present, a lot of times people think, oh, that being present means I'm aware that my horse is, or that my round is going poorly. I'm aware of that. When I think it's much more subtle and much more, what's the word I'm looking for? Instantaneous. The moment that happened, and it's past tense, it needs to be gone from the worry section of your brain so that your brain can focus on the improved section in the now. So he's going more forward than sideways at this very second. So I need to engage my core a little bit and give a half halt. Oh, look, he's going a little bit more sideways. Now he's not going forward enough. I need to relax my lower back so that you're literally in that significant moment. It sounds so easy, and it's so hard to do.
Yeah, as a judge, I appreciate showmanship. I like it when someone's confident, and I tell, especially kids, imagine you're in a stadium, you are showing to the person in the last row, and it feels a little goofy. And especially like with in-hand classes, I make the kids that I teach, I make them act like they're holding a pizza box out in front of them. So like your arms aren't slumped to your side. And you are projecting, and you, it feels goofier than it looks. But as far as like keeping your run together, it's actually even more than just maintaining your confidence in the face of something, maybe it's not going as perfect as you want, and this was like the number one epiphany when shown. So how the format was this weekend, and this isn't how it works for every class. This isn't how it works for rail classes, but when you're doing something that has like a pattern and it has several different elements, what I have in front of me as a judge is a row of boxes, and each box gets its own score, and each box usually stands for, for instance, if your pattern is to walk in, stop, and then do a 180-degree turn, and then trot over these poles, and then back up, blah, 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 blah. Every box has a movement. So you've got the box that says, okay, this is the first part of the pattern, which they're supposed to walk in and come to a halt. Then the next box, okay, now they're supposed to walk over these poles. Then the next box. And as a judge, what I'm doing... So the points for this weekend was every box had a potential to get anywhere from 1 to 10 points. We didn't do penalties in this one because it's a training competition instead of like a formal horse show. But they had a chance to score anywhere from 1 to 10 points, 1 being very poor, 10 being the most amazing you could get. So with each new element of the pattern, they have a possibility to score a 10. As a competitor, I used to look at my runs as a whole run. So if I had a devastating mistake at the beginning of my run, I thought, oh, it's over. It's over. But that's not how the math works on these things. You could score a 1. Maybe your horse messed up something. They were supposed to walk over the poles and they didn't. They refused at the bridge or something. And you could get a 1 on that. But you can pull it out. And if you get like really high scores on the rest of it, you can still come out on top because of the way those scores average out. So even though you had a devastating mistake early on, each new element, it's like a brand new chance to show the judge what your horse can do. And I learned this, I had like this big epiphany moment back in 2013. I was showing at the Mustang Million, which was this like the pinnacle of extreme Mustang makeovers. We had hundreds of competitors in this thing. And our trail class had like 180 entrants. It took 2 days to complete the trail class.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was a pretty tricky class. I remember there was like this little pinwheel of poles that you had to lope over. And it was smaller than a 10-meter circle. So not only are you loping a teeny tiny little circle, but you're doing it over these raised ground poles. It was really hard. And a lot of people just went crashing through it and couldn't get it done. I was like one of the few who nailed it, and my whole pattern just looked gorgeous. And so I had this like beautiful, clean run. I had people coming up to me after my run like, oh man, you definitely had to have won that class. Like that was the best pattern I saw. And because it took 2 days, we had to do it in two different rounds to finish this, to get everyone through the pattern. I had a whole day to think about how great my run was, and I'm kind of walking around all puffed up like, yeah, I nailed it. So then when they put the scores out, I'm like, okay, I can't wait to see how close to the top I was. I look at the top and I'm not there, and I keep scrolling down and I'm not there and I'm not there and I'm not there. And I looked and I was like in 80th place. And I'm not going to lie, I went to my tax stall and bawled because, we're all trying to make the finals and this thing was high pressure. It had $1 million purse. And so I went to my stall and cried my eyes out for just 5 minutes. And then I got myself back together And the first thing I did, I'm like, okay, I got to see what happened. Like, why did I score so low? Especially because there was a friend of mine who, her run, she messed up two elements pretty badly. Like you were supposed to pick up a slicker off of a pole and her horse really spooked at that. You were supposed to work a gate because it was a trail class and her horse really kind of didn't do very well at that either. And so that compared to my very pretty run, and she scored several places ahead of me. And I'm like, how did this happen? So the first thing I did, and if you ever get a chance at these shows, this is what I encourage. I went to the show office and I looked at score sheets. And so I looked at score sheets and I looked at the final placings. So one, even though I was like in 80th place, we were all so close and the competition was so stiff that there was only like 10, 20 points separating those first 80 competitors. So I still scored almost as high as the people in the top spots. But
yeah,
because
one point here and one point there makes a difference when the competition's that stiff. Yeah.
Plus we had like three judges. So, you know, if each judge has you scoring a point lower than another competitor, you know, that adds up and it makes a bigger point difference. But between 80 competitors, you know, a really thin point spread like that really has this illusion of I'm thinking I'm in 80th place, but really I was right in that pack of competitors who did very well.
You were the 80th place, but still in the top 20 percentile. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. You're right. It's all about the math.
Yes. And I looked at each element of what I scored. I looked at all of those boxes and I scored like sixes and sevens, which was all above average. Like, you know, this was done very well. So sixes and sevens consistently across the run. And I specifically picked my friend's run because I had seen her run. So like I had watched it happen. I did not think it was a better run than my run. So I looked at her run. And what I saw was, yep, she got some low scores on those two things. She got like, you know, twos and threes on those two elements that were mistakes. But her horse had some amazing things where my horse simply came to a nice stop soft. She had her horse sliding into the stop, which is a, you know, very high caliber Western maneuver. And so even though she got twos and threes on a couple of elements, she was getting sevens and eights on the rest of her. And when you did the math, I'm like, yeah, she beat me fair and square. And it helped me like dispel all those like feelings of failure or the judge didn't really give me a fair score, which wasn't what I was thinking. But, you know, sometimes it's hard when you think you have a great run and you score lower.
You take it personally. Yeah. You take it personally.
Like, why didn't they like me? And no, they did like me. But when you add it up, and that's something as a judge, I will also say, I don't look at competitors and go, oh, that's my friend Stacy, or oh, I know that girl, she won it all last year. My vision isn't good enough to always recognize who's in the ring. It's good enough to judge. But I'm not thinking about that. I'm thinking of what is this horse scoring on this element? What's it scoring on this element? And then the judging is going so fast that I give the scribe, you know, I'm like, okay, 4.5, 6, 7, 9, 2. I don't add up those final scores. So I don't even know who won in the class that I just judged. I just know this is what this element got. This is what this element got. So is there bias? Yes, absolutely. Is there corruption? I'm sure. But from my perspective, I'm sitting there and I'm just, it's going too fast for me to go, oh, I don't like her horse as much, or she was mean to me the other day. You know, I'm just looking at this is what this scored. This is what this scored. And I have no idea how it ended up after the fact. I'll do a little comparing, like if I see two runs that were near perfect on like a certain element, I'm like, did I like that bridge crossing better than I liked the one I just saw? I don't know. And the other thing is, judges, as me as a judge, no matter who is in there, I am rooting for you. I want you to come out with perfects. So it's not this feeling that I have like, oh, you know, that just wasn't absolutely perfect, or she didn't do this, she didn't do this. I'm like, no, keep going. You're almost there. Get your horse to cross that bridge. So I am looking for a chance to give you credit. So if you, you know, meet me halfway and you keep showing and you have that confidence and showmanship, it's allowing me to give you more points.
I understand where you're going with that, because
we're rooting for you.
Yeah, you're partway through that movement, or because you see the transition, even though each movement has its own block. There's moments of transition from block one to block two. So the competitor is unhappy with how movement in block one went. So their attitude and their demeanor changes between block one and block two. You see that change, and it's going to affect, at the very least subconsciously, how you judge that next one. If that competitor has a less than stellar block one, movement one, but that competitor maintains their demeanor and their positive outlook and their present, that transition into the next movement is not going to have the negative effect on the judge's eye. Ah, this is so interesting. We always have, I say this every show. Every show I have light bulb moments, and every show I point them out. And this is one of them, that it's, even if it's subconscious, that does affect what the judge puts down either in his brain for later or on that piece of paper for the via the scribe. Interesting stuff, Mary. Woohoo! Yeah. And while we're on the topic of horse shows, did you have a fun time at your horse show with Remy? And tell everybody who Remy is for newbies.
Remy is my adorable little Mustang that I've had since 2018. He was an extreme Mustang makeover horse, and now I show him in stock horse shows. And so we show him the Stock Horse of the Texas Association. And he did just kind of meh at this last show. We had some mistakes every run that kept us really out of the top spots in the competition. The show before, he got reserve champion. But this one, he was okay. There were some really great elements that I was really happy with. I'm trying to think of the mistake he made in trail that I was like, come on, dude.
There's always one of those.
Yes. I think so in our trail classes, if you tick a pole, so they have ground poles everywhere that you have either have to lope over or back through or walk over or trot over. And if you, everyone you tick is like a 2-point penalty, which can be devastating to your score. And oh, I think he ticked a couple poles, if I'm not mistaken. He just did okay. But the good news is I'm trying for year-end points. So we got some points. So it wasn't a total bust.
There we go.
Yes. Yeah. But he did pretty good.
Yay!
I do want to add one final quick thing, because I could talk about this for 3 hours. But when you go to these competitions, read the rules. I can't tell you how many people thought they should get credit for something where I, as a judge, I'm like, that's not on my score sheet. I can't really do much for you if it's not on my score sheet. I have to go by in my score sheet has a big paragraph on top that explains this is what gets 3 points. This is what gets 5 points. This is what gets 10 points. So read the rules, look at those score sheets, and find places where you can. Maybe your horse isn't as fancy, and this is how I score really well. My horse doesn't have a sliding stop. He doesn't have the pretty movement that some of the, you know, registered quarter horses have. But I practice things that other people don't practice, like walking in straight lines, for instance. And you'll be surprised how many times you look on a score sheet and, you know, one element might be sliding stop. So everyone focuses on that. But then the next box on the score sheet is like, did you walk a straight line? that is worth as many points. So that's where I sneak in. So like an extended walk or something that looks very simple, but a lot of people aren't going to practice on, that's where you can sneak in and steal those points.
Oh, boy, just tons and tons of real gems today, Mary.
Oh, good.
And speaking of gems, autumn is a gem of a season, and all the fall gear you need is easy at Chewy. Heavy new blankets, bulky coolers, tubs of supplements, even prescription items are no problem at Chewy. Every order over $49 ships for free, so you can stock up on everything you need for fall without the heavy lifting. Order online or in the app and let Chewy deliver right to your barn, fast and free, hassle-free, so you can spend more time enjoying autumn rides with your horse. Start shopping now at chewy.com/equine. Who has our first listener question, and what is it?
We've got a question from Melanie, and it is, what are some groundwork exercises I can do to build confidence in a young horse who tends to worry and shut down, and the horse is 4 years old? Great question. So I'm glad that you're recognizing that your horse can shut down, because horses that shut down, it doesn't look at like as dramatic as a horse that, say, spooks or bolts. They can just look very still. But it can, on the inside, they can be just as anxious as a horse that is being very dramatic and outward and extroverted with what they're feeling. So what we want to teach a horse that is shut down is, or wants to, that's their like go-to thing, is we want to teach them that trying is safe, curiosity is rewarded, and pressure doesn't mean panic. So those are like three things that I'm going to be thinking about with a horse like this. So with my shutdown horse, or my horse that tends to, my more introverted horse that tends to kind of just, I call it going on screensaver mode. It's like, you know, you see flying toasters going across the screen. Back in the day, that was the popular screensaver. So anything I do with this horse in terms of movement, I want to attach some meaning to it. So horses like this, you know, just lunging them around in a circle and, you know, just kind of mindless drills, it's just going to let them, you know, turn the off switch on to where, yeah, they'll be doing it, but they're not really there with you. So I like to do a lot of body control exercises with a horse like that. Very simple, yielding of the hindquarters, yielding the shoulders, backing up. You want to keep the pressure light, and you really want to be good with timing your release on a horse like this. Like every time they try, you want to just really throw that release to them and let them know that when I'm engaged and I'm present and I'm trying, I'm going to feel relief. I'm going to feel reward. And this kind of builds the, I can move my feet calmly when I feel worried inside muscle. Instead of just like standing straight like a statue and, you know, ignoring the outside world, I like to do a lot of gentle movement with this horse. I'll do this a lot when I'm starting a colt that, so obviously if I'm trying to get on a colt that's dancing around and, you know, being dramatic, I that horse is projecting to me like, I don't feel good about this right now. So I can see with my eyes what's going on. But there's, you know, the horses that tend to like go into their own little world. When a horse like stands like ridiculously still as a statue when I'm first getting on, that actually makes me just as nervous as the one that's dancing around. So
because a lot of times when they're doing that, they're just saving up energy for one giant explosion. Yeah.
Yeah. So they look like they look statuesque, but in their mind it's like 3, 2, 1,
blast off.
Yeah. So what I do with those horses is, you know, I might start, you know, put my foot in the stirrup, getting half on, get half, you know, all the mounting exercises. But then in between each one, I'm going to say, hey, can you just do like a little circle for me? And that helps me gauge what's going on. If they're really stiff and, you know, kind of shut down or tense,
and I move them and I can see their feet are, you know, they're just moving in a really herky jerky way. I'm like, okay, you are not okay. You were standing still, but you're not okay. So I'll just keep working with them until those feet just soften up and everything gets calm again. And then I'll try again. So another thing you can do with a horse like that is to build their curiosity. So I like to do obstacle course work with those horse, you know, setting out some tarps and cones and ground poles and barrels. I let them investigate, let them approach things with a loose lead rope or a loose rein. I don't make him go up to something he's not okay with, but I'm just going to reward each time he like wakes up and goes, huh, I wonder what this barrel is. And I'm trying to just kind of build that curiosity in him, because curiosity is going to be the antidote to fear. And this is where I love positive reinforcement training, especially for obstacle work. It gets your horse out of the zone of, oh no, what's all this stuff into the arena, to, oh my gosh, what is all this stuff in the arena? I want to go look at it. So if you can do things that are going to build that horse's curiosity, so it sends them a little bit out of their comfort zone, but not so much that they just go back inside themselves again. So building on that, anything that is spooky to my horse, instead of trying to flood him with it, like, oh, you're going to get used to this bag. I see TikTok trainers all the time use the saying, oh, if you're scared of it, you get to wear it. I'm like, come on, guys, don't do that.
I actually saw one of those. I was doing really bad ads this morning, and somebody had sent us an ad for really bad ads. And there was a picture in the ad of a horse that they described as naughty in various and sundry ways. They had taken an empty feed bag and tied it to their halter behind their ears, yeah, and sent them off into the pasture galloping at lightning speed. There you go.
That's just a quick way to ruin a horse. And if any of you guys do that, I'll be very disappointed. Now, I can use approach and retreat and get my horse to the point that I can safely tie things to him. And if you want to do that, great. But just don't flood them with scary things, because especially with your shutdown horse, this is where the most accidents I see on horses are people who unknowingly couldn't read that their horse was just ignoring everything instead of learning from everything. And they're like, why desensitize this horse all day long? And I wave bags around him and everything. I don't know why he bucked me off when I got my raincoat on. I'm like, when they're in that shutdown state, they're not learning. Information is not going in. In the horse's brain, he's just thinking, la, 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 this isn't happening. Which I get, you know, like when I go to scary movies, I plug my ears and close my eyes and I'm like, ha, 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 this isn't happening. Yeah. So anytime the horse does find something particularly scary, use approach and retreat. Let him approach, take it away before he feels overwhelmed. It lets your horse know that he has a voice in the conversation. You want him to be an active participant in his own training. And when these horses that tend to be very introverted, when they realize that, you would be so surprised at how much they come out of their shell and become this very expressive, confident horse. And as far as, you know, working with obstacles that the horse needs to cross, like poles or a bridge or water, instead of leading him into those things, work on sending him between you and the obstacles. So that's
let's stop there for a second.
Oh yeah.
I want to dive just a little bit deeper into the difference, because this is something I struggle with, because I didn't start out my horsey life doing this type of work. The difference between what's going on in the horse's brain when you lead them over through past something that's potentially stressful versus sending them. In other words, you're holding the loose rope and the horse goes and performs the task ahead of you. What's the difference inside of his brain?
So it's okay to lead horses through obstacles. I will say that. But if you can add that challenge of sending the horse forward, you, one, I think it mimics riding more closely, because when we ride up to an obstacle, where am I situated on the horse? I'm behind the girth area on him. So I'm driving him to that obstacle, and he has to be brave because he's the first thing to approach it. So he's almost all by himself a little bit with support from the rider, but he has to go to it first and cross, which can be very scary. And it's way more scary than following someone across. So absolutely, you can lead a horse across, you can have him follow another horse, but if you can get to where your horse can approach it on his own, that's what the sending on the ground is mimicking. And it teaches the horse, oh, I can go first and it's safe. So it builds his independence and curiosity.
Ooh, I need to add this to my list because I don't do this enough. James is by nature a spooky guy. So, and we have come across some things where he stops briefly, and I'm going to use my air quotes, refuses to go past or near something. And I think... and they've been relatively small things in that we waited 5 seconds and then we were able to do our thing. But I want to be ready to get to some things that I have no control over that are way scarier. And I think this is going to help his confidence. He just lacks confidence that, oh, I can be the leader here. I can do this. I'm cool. If I get off of him and I walk first, 99.9% of the time, he very obediently just walks right along with me. But the end goal is to get
testing it out for him.
Right. You're going to get eaten first. If you don't get eaten, I'm good. I'm coming along.
Exactly.
But I need to step that up a little bit. So I need to do more of sending him forward, pass through, over things that are potentially intimidating. Another light bulb moment. Two in the same
yes.
show. Continue.
And I'll get into this in another question answer. But say it's a bridge. You're trying to get your horse to cross a bridge. When you send, if your horse is very terrified of it, don't send him with the goal immediately to get him to cross the bridge. Find a place where he still feels the pressure a little bit, but where he's not going to jump on top of you. Because that is the risk with sending him, is he might go, you know what? It's safer in your front pocket than it is to go across the bridge. And you don't want it to where you're having to just like beat on him to get him to go across. So I may have to start 50 feet away from the scary thing and say, just go between me and the scary thing. And the more you send him across, the more he gets to pass the scary thing with both eyes, because he's going to go this way, look at it through his right eye, turn around, go this way, look at it through his left eye. He's going to start calming down. His confidence is going to build. And then you can take a step closer, a step closer, a step closer. So, you know, be mindful. If your horse looks like he's about to be airborne, maybe create a little bit more space so you don't get run over.
And don't take it personally if your horse thinks about landing in your front pocket, or actually does. If you watch horses at liberty doing what they do that to each other too. So don't get it all insulted. They do that to each other. It's your job as the human to keep it from happening.
Yes. They don't often know how squishy and fragile we are. We have to,
that's right.
We have to set up some boundaries to show them, like, listen, I am not 1,000 pounds. Like, you know, it's gonna hurt me when you stomp on my foot.
Right. Well, and his little pal out in the field, if they're roughhousing and they bump into each other, his pal is not going to react by literally physically punishing him like a human would. I'm not saying that's appropriate for the human to react that way, but it's very common for the human to react the way that that other horse might lay his ears back or turn and, you know, shoot a bullet across the bow and just threaten him. But he's not going to haul off and beat the living daylights out of him like you see humans do so often. So make sure that you're not projecting that, you know?
Yeah, the horse is already terrified. So he's terrified, and you're going to solve it by, I'm going to open up a can of whoop, you know.
I'm going to
open up a can on you. It's like, no.
That's not going to make it better.
You can set healthy boundaries of, no, we're not going to run over me. But I never do it with any kind of anger. I'm like, nope, there's an electric fence between you and me. You can freak out anywhere you want, just not on top of me. You can freak out within reason.
There we go. Very good. Thank you, Melanie, for the question. and keep us up to date on how it's going with your young 4-year-old and how you're helping to build his confidence.
For first-time horse owners and new riders, finding the information and support you need can be challenging. That's why Equine Network has partnered with Sentinel and Absorbine to bring you My New Horse. From important horsekeeping information and how-to videos to social media communities, exclusive experiences, and more, My New Horse is your one-stop shop for riders of all levels and disciplines looking for easy-to-understand horse care information and guidance. Start your horse ownership journey today. Visit mynewhorse.com.
Let's go to one that's related to that. It's from Tracy. And her question is, my young mare will stand at a mounting block in the middle of an arena, a tree stump on the trails, but won't let me mount anywhere near a wall. She swings her butt away or kicks a back leg out, but she's had no negative experiences.
Ooh, so, mystery.
Yes, that is a great question. Let me look. I've actually written down a little bit of what I wanted to say. Okay. So this kind of feeds into what I was talking about, the bridge. And you've made a good observation because, you know your mare isn't being bad. She's just telling you where she feels trapped. And the fence can often make a horse feel trapped and claustrophobic because they see less ability to move their feet, which is very important to them. You know, they're prey animals. So if you add a wall, she loses a potential escape route. And that is often enough to make them throw this little protest kick or, you know, swing their hips around because she's just like, you know, I feel too trapped. So instead of, and I know you're not doing this, but instead of like, I'm going to demand you behave right on this wall, we're going to start practicing where she already feels safe. So I start in the middle of the arena where she feels like, okay, I can move if I want to. That's what's important for horses is most of my groundwork is like, I'm letting you know, listen, you can move if you want. I'm going to control how you do it. We're going to do it in a safe way. But if you need to move your feet, you can. And often giving them that reassurance makes them go, okay, well, as long as I know I can. So starting in her comfort zone is where I'm going to start. And you're going to chip away at the wall issue. You know, make sure, is she really good out in the open? Does she stand as long as you want her to? Does she line up to the mounting block precisely? So make sure you've got her comfort zone. Make sure you've got that down pat, because that's going to be your foundation, having that confidence there. And then you're going to chip away at the wall. So I'm not going to start at the wall, start a horse length away, maybe, or wherever she feels comfortable, but you're starting to get close to that threshold. So you're going to start a horse length away and gradually move closer over time, always rewarding her when she stands. So think of it as you're shrinking that circle of comfort until the wall is just no big deal. If she swings her butt away, we're not going to get frustrated. We're just going to quietly ask her to put it back where it belongs and then reward when she does. So you could try and get this all done in a few sessions. If it's not mega important that she's doing it quickly, how I would tackle it is every day, I just move her mounting block a little bit closer to the wall as you get on and off to where, you know, by the end of the week or, you know, the end of several sessions, it's almost like you don't realize, oh, we're at the wall now. But if you need to do it quicker, you can absolutely get this knocked out in a few sessions. So the other thing that's really important, like I said earlier, is I don't want the wall to feel like a dead end for her. I want her to feel like she still has options. So, you know, I'll let her move within reason. I always, you know, but I don't punish her when she moved and I didn't ask her to. I just gently reset her. You want to keep your energy really soft, no matter what she's doing. You can be firm when you need to be firm. You know, obviously she's trying to pull the reins out of your hands. You need to hold firm and not allow that to happen. But your energy is going to be very soft and smooth. If you brace up, she's going to brace up too. So after you've you've begun to accomplish, you've overcome her fear of the wall, and you're getting that done pretty good. Now what you want to do is proof the behavior. So you're going to mix it up. Sometimes you're going to mount in the middle. Sometimes you're going to mount near your fence. Sometimes you're going to mount by the gate. Horses love predictability. So when you're teaching her, you want it to be predictable and repetitive. But once you get her over her fear of the wall, now you want to proof it by teaching her that mounting is the same calm routine no matter where you are. So oftentimes this, you know, if you only practice it a certain way, this is where you will have the problem of, I can mount in the arena, but not on the trail. Any behavior you teach an animal, you want to first be consistent and teach it and let them know what the name of the game is. And then you're always going to go and proof it. Like, just because you can do it on this side of the arena, I want to make sure you can do it on the other side of the arena. Or just because you can do it inside, I want to make sure you can do it outside. Just because you can do it at home, I need to make sure you're going to be able to do it at the show. It's not about fixing a bad habit so much. It's about teaching her the wall is just another place where good things happen. So, be patient, take small steps, and she'll get over it pretty quickly.
Very interesting. And that's, again, something, because my horse that I ride now is a youngster with very limited life experience. We have a very different ride depending upon where I get on. If I get on over in the place, I'm going to use my air quotes again, the normal place where my mounting block usually sits, I can have a reasonably predictable kind of a ride. But if I decide to go to a completely foreign place in the farm, which is a whopping 5 acres, by the way, and get on there, mounting block still, that's not different. But if the first time I hit the saddle is in a completely different place, I can be pretty darn sure our ride is going to start out pretty wide-eyed. So again, this is something that, hello, Jennifer, somebody's trying to tell you something. I need to add more variety, not by getting on at the opposite side of the farm and causing him to become wide-eyed and buggy, but by getting on 15 feet away. Next time, get on 15 feet the other direction. Next time, get on 30 feet the opposite direction. And just gradually increase that sphere of contentment, because when I got him, the minute my butt hit the saddle, he was on fire and ready to take off. So I kept the mounting block in the same place so that we could get that. But now what I've done, because I've left it there and been lazy, now I've created a habit which is not desirable.
Yeah. And it's, you know, at home, sometimes like, I just want to go out and ride. I don't want to make everything this big training challenge. But at some point, if you want to push your horse into that next level of maturity or get your horse safer and better away from home, we've got to kind of go, okay, I'm going to go drag the mounting block over here today to mount, you know, And I like to, when I have the convenience of time and the comfort of home, I like to do it in ways that it's not going to cause this huge thing. So one of my favorite exercises that I've seen a clicker trainer do, when she gets scary things out for her horse, instead of like getting the 5 most scariest things you could ever find and, you know, sending her horse into a tizzy, she will throw stuff on the fence. You know, like, I'm going to put this towel over here. I'm going to set this brush on the fence, and just like totally benign, random stuff. And maybe one of those things is a little scary, and she has her horse target those things, to where for the horse, he's like, oh yeah, I know this game. Ooh, that one's a little weird, but I remember the game. And, you know, if you can keep it just that kind of, you know, easy going thing, you'd be surprised how quickly you can build up your horse's tolerance without it having to be this big dramatic thing.
Dun, dun, dun. Again, awesome, great stuff. And speaking of dramatic things and awesome things, we're going to be right back after we hear from this from one of our sponsors.
Want to reach a passionate, engaged audience of horse lovers? The Horse Radio Network, with thousands of listeners worldwide, offers unique sponsorship opportunities to connect your brand with horse owners, riders, and enthusiasts. Over 90% of our listeners have bought a product from a HRN ad in the past year. Partner with HRN and take your brand to the next level. visit www.horseradionetwork.com/advertise today.
And who is the lucky listener who submitted our final question of the day?
We have one from Jessica, and it is, what do you recommend to train a horse for emergency situations? So example would be like loading into strange trailers on the side of the freeway or dealing with floods and fires. So I like that you have that on your mind, because the middle of an emergency is not the time to discover your horse has never practiced the basics. So think of this like fire drills. We don't expect them to calmly exit a building the first time if we haven't rehearsed it. So like if you're doing, you know, fire drills, if you haven't rehearsed your fire drills, you don't expect people to just be like, oh, I totally know what we're doing in this situation. So horses are the same. So I'd say probably a big one would be practice trailer loading as a daily skill. Don't make it this rare, stressful thing that you never, you know, you hardly ever do. You only do when absolutely necessary. Practice loading and unloading calmly in all sorts of conditions. So this is where we're going back into proofing a behavior. Practice different trailers, practice different angles, practice backing out slowly and calmly. Because if you only load when it's time to go to the show or the vet, the trailer becomes a red flag because the horse is like, oh no, we're going to go work really hard at a show. Or, oh no, I'm going to go get a bunch of needles injected. So make it part of their weekly curriculum to where it's just this neutral thing that we do and it's no big deal. Because in an emergency, the stakes are higher, the pressure's on. And if we haven't practiced it calmly a lot, then their horse isn't going to have much training to fall back on when things get a little bit more scary. So the other thing is you want to teach your horse to follow you through anything. So you want him to understand how to give to the pressure of the lead rope. And this is where you're going to lead your horse or send your horse through things like puddles, over tarps, into barns, across bridges, past barking dogs. And if you can, again, proof all of those behaviors, take all the groundwork you've been teaching your horse and start adding more challenges. If you can introduce your horse to those things at home, then getting him to step onto a trailer on the side of a freeway is going to be doable. So you're going to start with your small obstacles at home, and then you can build up to busier environments. And with this comes building your horse's emotional resilience, which is important whether you're in emergency situations or not. If you're going to do anything with your horse outside the comfort of your arena at home, you need to build that resilience. So you can gradually expose them to things like noises, maybe sirens, flapping tarps. You could even, like, if you wanted to get really creative, you could do smoke machines. So, or maybe an umbrella opening, anything that's just kind of odd and out of place. You're going to use approach and retreat. You're going to do this, you know, use your brain, use it within reason. And you're always going to release pressure when they give you any kind of try or when they relax. Teach them that strange things don't mean dangerous. So if you've ever been to one of those like de-spooking clinics that the mounted police put on, those are really fun.
Those are really fun.
They're doing smoke bombs and fireworks, and because they're literally training their horses for emergency situations, because that's their horse's job, is to be cool and calm in those high pressure scenarios.
One of the things, again, this is not something I grew up doing, this is all very recent for me to do with Spooky Baby Horse. I have to really remind myself and think, try something novel every single time I do something with him. Every time. And I have to work at that because just not in my regular routine. When we got him, anytime he had to walk through a narrow space, an unfamiliar narrow space, there would be bug-eyed baby behaviors. And one of the narrow spaces we have to walk through is through our barn aisle, where we have a 6-foot tall giant barn fan. He's gotten used to this, that giant 6-foot tall giant barn fan, but it's not. And then he got used to it turned off, and then he got used to it turned on. Now he has to get used to it while we stop right next to it with his face 6 inches away while I turn it on and off.
Nice. Just
little baby steps, because my immediate response was, you have to stand there and look at it while I turn it on, while I turn it off, while I move the cart. No, because that's what I would have done 15 years ago. Small steps. Wait until he could care less that he walks past when it's turned off. Wait until he could care less when he walks past when it's turned on. Wait until he could care less when I move it while it's turned off. In those baby steps. That sounds so easy when you say it, to take baby steps like that. It's hard. I'm sorry.
I learned, especially starting cults, you once you get into the practice of it, of, I call it sneaking it in. So instead of like, okay, we're going to work on all of this today, I just add a little element as we go along. And when it comes to these emergency scenarios, especially if you live in a place that, you know, okay, yeah, there's a fire season here, or I live on a floodplain and things flood, it can help to like keep you calm and ready to go by, you know, planning, what would I do? You know, make sure you have your halter, lead, and a plan in place, and know what your plan is going to be. You could practice these things if you want, or at least have in your mind, okay, if this happens, then what is the plan of action? Where do I go first? What supplies do I need to grab hold of? Do I know where those things are? What trailer am I going to load into? And, you know, like I said, if you really want to get good at it, you can practice it. You can even time yourself and, you know, work on doing it smoothly and calmly. And that's going to be faster in the long run. The important thing is, in any of these, especially these weather events, a horse that walks onto the trailer is the one who's going to make it out. So it never hurts if you want to practice that scenario. It's good training for your horse anyway. And I would say, you know, above all, and this is something I've really had to practice working with wild horses, is your mindset is really important. The horse is going to mirror you. So if you freeze and get frantic, they will too. So you want to be the voice of reason in these emergencies.
Dun, dun, dun. Thank you very much, Jessica, for your question. For folks who want to appropriately stalk you online, buy artwork, have you do a clinic, have you train a horse, have you do something else for them with their horses, where can they find you?
You can find me on Facebook at Mary Kay Kitzmiller or Mary Kitzmiller Horsemanship. I'm also on TikTok, but I'm just doing fun stuff on TikTok. I think it's also MK Horsemanship. And I have a website, MaryKitzmiller.com.
Dun, dun, dun. And you can find links to today's show at horsesinthemorning.com. Until next time, we'll see you around. Yeah.
All right. See you next month.